And the court will proceed to the fourth case, In Re Health Management Limited Partnership, the appeal of William Coughlin. Mr. Gates.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Gordon Gates, and I'm representing William Coughlin. However, for purposes of the appeal, I think it's important for us all to remember that I'm really speaking in the voice of Marine Bank. Mr. Richardson is representing Universal Guarantee. However, in the same vein, he is speaking for National City Bank. I think that's important because several times in the underlying cases, it seems that the district court and the bankruptcy court lost sight of who the parties to various agreements are. The parties to the litigation aren't really the parties to the underlying agreements, and I think that's important for at several points. Our position, obviously, is that Marine Bank, our predecessor in interest, had a security interest, a perfected security interest, in $3.6 million, perfected security interest in accounts receivable, and that security interest also secured my client's, or the note that my client personally guaranteed. We think that for several reasons, but I think the one that is the most far-reaching and the most appropriate for this court to deal with is really based upon a combination of the Uniform Commercial Code, basic contract law, and what this circuit has developed under what's come to be called the composite document theory. There's no question under the loan agreement that everybody knows existed. It's a 12-page document, very detailed loan agreement between the borrower and the lender, that a security interest has been granted in the accounts receivable. Everybody agrees to that. What's also important is that the agreement had, the Second Amended Restated Loan Agreement, had what's come to be called the dragnet clause that provides that this agreement controls not only current lending, but all future lending, now existing or here and after arising. It also includes an integration clause, and I think that comes into play. That clause, 14.2, provides that nothing in this agreement may be changed, modified, amended, waived, supplemented orally, or, most importantly, by any course of dealing or in any matter other than by an agreement in writing signed by the borrower, which in this case was Health Management Limited Partners. Now, the law from the UCC clearly has adopted or accepted the dragnet clauses. The UCC has said that a loan agreement that covers future loans can comply or can control. This particular loan agreement is very inclusive. It's very broad. It was designed to cover all manner of indebtedness. It was clearly a long-term lending arrangement between a fairly substantial borrower and the bank. And it was anticipated, clearly in the language of the agreement, it was anticipated that there's going to be all kinds of loans made, whether it was going to be short-term operating loans, whether there's going to be payroll loans, all manner of loans were going to be made, and they were going to be all secured by accounts receivable. In this case,
was this the only loan in this whole series of loans that identified a particular account?
That identified a particular account?
Mm-hmm.
Well, make sure I understand what you mean by account. In all
identified
these,
an account with a number and
that
was pledged.
This particular note, this $250,000 note in March, is the only note that references an assignment of an account, a CD. The other promissory notes reference, and I think it's important, the word is reference. It doesn't create a security interest. It references accounts receivable, fixtures and equipment, things of that nature. This note is unquestionably unique in that it is a note that is 100% secured by cash. So it is different to that extent. Now, the reason I asked the question about what you meant when account is the account number on the tops of every note is the same. The borrowing relationship is always the same. It's referencing a particular account number, a loan account number, which is the same account number that is referenced in the second amended loan agreement. So the word account to me means this lending relationship, and this lending relationship is controlled by this loan agreement. Now, Your Honor is right. This note is different. It's a little different. It has a. It was signed in one day. It was negotiated in one day. Everybody was in a panic. And the document, the note itself, states only that borrower acknowledges that this note is secured by an assignment of accounts.
This was the only one that required cash.
That's correct.
In addition to account receivable.
Exactly.
How was this physically handled? I mean, the CD, where did the CD come from?
The CD was money that Dr. Coghlan borrowed from another bank, brought to this bank, bought the CD, and then signed an assignment of the CD, separate document, and signed a hypothecation agreement, a separate document. Those are the only two documents that Dr. Coghlan signed. Obviously, the note was signed by Health Management Limited Partners. That's not something that Dr. Coghlan saw. And that, I think, is meaningful because there's been, and this gets back to who's the parties, both the district court and the bankruptcy court seem to have troubles with the fact that Dr. Coghlan didn't spend enough time reading the promissory note. He didn't get the promissory note. Dr. Coghlan wasn't a party to the promissory note. Dr. Coghlan may not even have seen the promissory note. All Dr. Coghlan saw was a hypothecation agreement and an assignment of his CD. So I think that the emphasis on this one line...
Assignment to...
To the bank, to Marine Bank. The language in the note that says the borrower acknowledges this note is secured. First of all, the borrower is not Dr. Coghlan. We don't stand in the shoes of the borrower. Second of all, the note doesn't create the security agreement. Create the security interest. And I think that's crucial to this case and also implicates the UCC and the composite document theory. The courts below spent a lot of time analyzing how this promissory note was different in that one line from the preceding promissory notes. The law is very clear that a note does not create a security interest. A note is merely the evidence of value given. It doesn't have to be in any particular form. It's just evidence of a value given. This document specifically says, it merely acknowledges. It doesn't say borrower grants, borrower gives. It's an acknowledgement. It doesn't mean anything. And on its face, it's clearly it's ambiguous only because it is referring to separate documents. On itself, it does not create a security interest. And pursuant to the terms of a long-standing existing agreement between these particular parties, you have to go back to the security agreement. And the cases that we've cited, this is not an appeal that involves a lot of disputed law. The cases are pretty much solid that when you have a situation where a security interest is created, we have to first go to the security agreement. That's what the Uniform Commercial Code says. That's what the composite document theory says. You go to the security agreement. The security agreement in this case is unquestionably the loan agreement. The loan agreement contains the grant of the security interest in the accounts receivable. And that is what's troubled us from the very beginning, is when you have a controlling agreement, a bank is entitled to believe that it's going to be followed, that they are entitled to rely on the UCC, rely on their own agreement, and when they stick a phrase in here that says it cannot be modified by a course of dealing, the fact that later events occur that maybe aren't inconsistent, that's the purpose of a loan agreement, is to deal with those inconsistencies. Otherwise, the banking comes to a screech and halt. Every note would be 30 pages long. And I see that I'm eating into my rebuttal time, and I'll hold that.
Thank you, Mr. Gates. Mr. Richardson?
May it please the Court, my name is Jeff Richardson. I'm an attorney from Decatur, and I represent Universal Guarantee Life Insurance Company. I want to talk about the two parts of this appeal. Gordon didn't have a chance to address the cash collateral order, but it was a large part of the trial. It was a large part of the briefs, both before this court and at the district court. The cash collateral order turns on the chronology in April of 2003, what actually happened. Dr. Coghlan, if you recall, put up $250,000 in cash, so to speak, to secure the $250,000 loan in March of 2003. On April 2, the bank, Marine Bank, gets wind that Doctors Hospital is starting to flood its money outside of its Marine Bank account, put them in a bank in Jacksonville. That sends up red flags. They call the loan. They pull Dr. Coughlin's $250,000 in cash. On April 2, unbeknownst to the bank, according to them, Doctors Hospital also files its Chapter 11 bankruptcy. So as of April 2, under the bankruptcy code, Dr. Coughlin was a $250,000 creditor of Doctors Hospital, Health Management, who everybody refers to as Doctors Hospital. He had his own independent standing. He had rights to protect. On April 4th, Marine Bank went in through General Block here in town to protect its rights under its cash and got a cash collateral order on April 4th. Dr. Coughlin never sought any bankruptcy court order to determine his collateral status. Dr. Coughlin never sought any determination of what his claims were, and his rights are not mentioned in the cash collateral order. Nevertheless, he asserted to the bankruptcy court, he asserted to the district court, he asserts to this court that the cash collateral order means no one can challenge his position in the bankruptcy. The bankruptcy court, in essence, said, no, Dr. Coughlin, that's not true, because the loan you're involved with was already paid off before April 4th, and your interests are not mentioned in the cash collateral order. The district court affirmed and went on to say, the cash collateral order means nothing more than it says, and that's sort of a cryptic comment, but what I think that means is this. The cash collateral order says no one will challenge the validity or perfection or priority of Marine Bank's lien. My client had a first mortgage, for example, on the hospital itself. Marine Bank had a second mortgage, but a first on the accounts receivable. I don't think anybody's contending, including Marine, that by not challenging Marine's cash collateral order, somehow Marine got the first mortgage and we had a second. That's what the district court meant. That says no more than it says. I think Dr. Coughlin would have been in a different position if in April or sometime thereafter he would have gone to the bankruptcy court and said, I want a determination in the form of some preliminary order, whether it's a cash collateral order or not, that I've got an interest in these accounts receivable. He didn't do that, and yet he says somehow that order protects him, and I don't think that's the case. With respect to the security documents, the problem Dr. Coughlin had here is that unlike the doctors that made the loan or guaranteed the loan in January, if you recall from the record, there was another $250,000 loan. In January of 2003, same problem happened 2 months earlier, 3 months earlier. They couldn't make payroll. Those doctors said this, we'll guarantee, they didn't put up $250,000, they put up their personal credit, but we're only going to do it if all this other collateral stands as collateral for this $250,000 you're advancing Marine, and you guarantee if this loan goes south that the first money out of those accounts receivable is going to be used to pay the loan we're guaranteeing. And that's exactly what happened. Dr. Coughlin's loan, by the same token, says nothing. It says, bank says, we want cash. We want $250,000 cash. That's the only way we're going to loan money. The loan presentation, which Marine Bank made for each one of these loans to take to its board of directors, when it says, what's the collateral? It says $250,000 DDA account. All the other loan presentations say, we've got accounts receivable, we've got fixtures, we've got a second mortgage, and it values that collateral. It wasn't done here. I asked, Howard Neuger, who's a lawyer, and the president or vice president of Marine Bank, who Mr. Gates called to testify, what would have happened if that loan where it said collateral on the note and the assignment would have said none? Would you still have your dragnet clause? And he said, well, that would be up to the judge to decide. I think the answer would be if it said none, you've got an uncollateralized loans because parties can change the way in which they deal. In this case, you've got something that's very analogous. It says $250,000 cash account is a collateral for this note. Nothing more, nothing less. You look outside the documents at the time, and you've got the loan presentation agreement that says $250,000 account, nothing more, nothing less, is a security for this loan. Dr. Coughlin, Your Honors, finds himself in this position. He's kind of like a guy that gets in a car wreck and after the fact decides maybe he needs car insurance. He finds himself in this position, and when you look for through the loan documents, well, where are these things that protect him? They're not there because he didn't negotiate them. He wasn't like the other doctors in January. In fact, he didn't even read the documents. And that's what we think. We think both the trial and the bankruptcy court were correct.
What was his interest in the hospital?
He, at one time, Your Honor, was a limited partner. And I think the record says he was until 1999. He got a divorce. He sold his interest. After that, he was a creditor of the hospital, and he worked there. The hospital, the record shows in the transcript, owed him about $200,000 in back wages, which they were paying him down on a monthly basis. So he had a vested interest in seeing that the hospital didn't fold, although he had no ownership interest. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. As I anticipated when I began my arguments or my remarks, we're once again having problems with who the parties are here. Mr. Richardson makes the comment that as regards the cash collateral order, that Mr. Coughlin didn't appear on his own behalf. Well, at that time, Mr. Coughlin wasn't a party. Mr. Coughlin is here, Dr. Coughlin is here today as standing in the shoes of Marine Bank. That's the only way I'm in court, is under Rule 509 of the Bankruptcy Code. I'm here not as a creditor, I'm here as standing in the shoes of Marine Bank. So my predecessor in interest did show up at the cash collateral hearing. Whether my guy was there or not is irrelevant. Marine Bank was there. Marine Bank was in fairly extensive and heated negotiations. If you've looked at it's part of my appendix. If you look at the cash collateral order, it's got scribbles and marks and drawings all over the place. Those were some detailed negotiations. Clearly, the parties were all aware of what was being said. That particular order specifically said that Marine Bank has a security interest in accounts receivable to the tune of $3.6 million. And the evidence was clear that that $3.6 million included my client's $250,000. And most importantly, that order had a safety valve. It said if anybody doesn't like this, if anybody has any problems with this, they have until July 1 to come in and file a complaint. Mr. Richardson's client did not do that. Mr. Richardson's client is now stuck with that cash collateral order. It is an order of the court, and it found that my client's interest was secured.
Counsel, who prepared the note?
The $250,000 promissory note was prepared by Marine Bank.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gates. Thank you, Mr. Richardson. The case is taken.